You are listening to the Stang Gang Men's Basketball Podcast presented by the Greater Texas Ford Dealers on the Midwestern State Digital Network. We'll take a weekly inside look with Coach Justin Leslie into the men's basketball program. We'll recap last week's games and take a look at this week's opponents. It's the Stang Gang Men's Basketball Podcast on the Midwestern State Digital Network.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, Texas. This is Ford Truck Month. Get the best deals of the year on the only trucks built Ford tough. Drive home the all-new, completely redesigned 2021 Ford F-150, the legendary performer Ford Super Duty, or the adventure-ready Ford Ranger. Work or play, count on Ford trucks to get the job done. But hurry, Ford Truck Month is one show you don't want to miss.
You're listening to the Stang Gang Men's Basketball Podcast. Your host, Trey Reed, along with Midwestern State head coach Justin Leslie. And it's kind of a pre-tournament edition of the Stang Gang Podcast. It's been a couple weeks. We were interrupted by the snowstorm and then the recovery of the snowstorm coming out of that. So now back to as close to normal as you can get in 2021. And so we're heading into the Lone Star Conference Tournament. The Mustangs coming off of two really big wins over UT Permian Basin. And if you go back a year ago, you were coming off of a five-game winning streak heading into the tournament, heading out to Lubbock Christian a season ago. Now it's pretty similar situation, come off of four-game winning streak, heading to play a similar team in Dallas Baptist. So really starting to be a signature of your program of closing the regular season on a high note.
Well, no, we're definitely glad that we were able to finish this season well. You know, that stretch in the middle of the year, I mean, we had some close ones you ask yourself in some of those moments, are they going to be able to respond, you know, these young guys, and just continue learning, stick to the process. There's no special, you know, rah-rah speech or something else. It's just continue to get better, continue to try and challenge yourself on a daily basis to grow as an individual, improve your skill set, and then ultimately that helps the team continue to grow and develop. And I think our perspective was pretty healthy during that stretch where we were losing games in January, in early February there. And as a result, I think once we finally got back in the win column, we were able to have some positive momentum, and I've been real pleased with the development of the team over the last couple of weeks.
And you're coming off of the two wins last week, one a really big win at home, 88-63 over the Falcons of UT Permian Basin, and then typical of how the series have been going this year, it's a totally different game in Odessa. A little bit closer, you guys were able to take control late in that game to seal the victory. It's kind of, we've talked about that from week to week, just how the games have changed and how they're different. And I was listening to the post game interview with Pete Stein, and it sounded like the Falcons just slowed things down and really limited the possessions in the second game.
Yeah, we got off and running in that first game, and we're making shots, and they played at that same pace with us, and that really played into our favor. On Saturday, we weren't shooting terribly, but nowhere near what we were on Thursday night, but they were much more deliberate and didn't allow us to play with that same type of pace and energy. They were very intentional about holding the ball deeper into the shot clocks, not making quick shot attempts as they had been prone to previously. And as a result, it allowed them to hang around a little bit longer until we were able to find our offensive rhythm.
And what's been special about this year, in my eyes, is that you've had a different players at different points of the year step up and shine, and really Thursday night, one of the biggest shining lights in that game would have been Trey Jones off the bench, 6 of 10 from the field, hit three threes, 15 points, and then the post-game interview, he wasn't near as proud as the 15 points as he was out of coming in and being an energy guy, as he said, and the three steals that he made on defense were even bigger to him.
Yeah, you know, I was really happy for Trey that young man is really grown a lot over the course of our last 2 years together, and I'm proud of him. His identity has strictly been as a shooter his whole basketball life, I believe, and getting him to see the game, you know, in bigger terms, as a teammate, as a defender, in situations, even as a distributor. I think he's just continued to grow his understanding and grow his game there. Now, don't get me wrong, he's still a shooter, and I still yell, "Shoot the ball, Trey Jones," probably as much as anything when he's out there on the court. But I'm just proud to see you know, his level of maturity and the way he's been viewing the game in a more complete sense as he's developed.
So as a basketball player, that's got to be a great vote of confidence whenever your coach says, "Shoot the ball, shoot the ball, shoot the ball." But that's really more challenging, as you've told me in the past, of getting a player to feel comfortable shooting the ball that much.
Well, like with every player on any sport and any team has a role, and it's their job to, you know, be a star in that role. And for someone like Trey and amongst other shooters that we have on the team, their job is to shoot. And when it's your job to shoot, if you pass up an open shot and we end up taking a more contested or more difficult shot later on in the possession, that was a selfish decision. Maybe they didn't think that they wanted that one. Well, a better shot doesn't always present itself, and your job is to take shots. And not everybody's cut out for that. I mean, that's a different type of psychology, you know, as an athlete, where, you know, you have to be willing to take in some situations, you know, threes where maybe your rhythm or your balance is just slightly off, or the pass is slightly off, but sometimes you still have to take that shot, and you know, you have to risk your individual numbers, you know, for the sake of what the team needs in that spot. But you know, I think that it's always sounds fun to be a shooter, to get the green light from your coach, but then once players start realizing the responsibility that comes with that, the extra reps that it takes outside of practice, you know, on their own or in their individual workouts or in their shooting challenges against teammates, they have to go out there and consistently perform so that they earn the trust of themselves. You know, first and foremost, they have to have belief that they can make that shot in that moment. But also for the teammates that are making the pass, that are setting the screen, it's one of those elements of being a shooter that you know, not always gets considered, but it's critical for team success.
And on your team, you have to have a license to shoot. How do you obtain one of those?
Well, everybody has to have a shooting license if they're going to shoot a three. And really, it's just a series of shots where, you know, I'm a believer that you need to make shots in practice or in small groups when you're not being defended in live action at 30% greater than what your desired game percentage should be. So for threes, our desired game percentage is 40% in order for it to be a statistically efficient shot. And so all of our shooting drills, in order to earn a license, they have to shoot at 70%. So it's a series of 50 threes that they have to do in 5 minutes or less, and they need to make 35 out of 50. But our top guys on the board, you know, we expect them to be shooting in the 80% range in those, because, you know, there's always going to be an element of slippage that happens in a game, or when you have an active defense who's there in your face, closing down on that shot, trying to take it away from you.
And then also on a Thursday, another great game from Jermaine Carter. I mean, he finishes the year, we'll talk about, as a double-double in the season ending game against, or the regular season ending game at UTPB. But 14 points, 9 rebounds, and he dealt out 4 assists. And, you know, we talked to, or you talked to Pete Stein about that in the post game. I think maybe even, remember, I believe I had a discussion with Casey Weitzel as well, just sticking out in my head too. But those 4 assists coming from Jermaine, coming from the block, that's a lot of the offense of what you want to see.
Well, it wasn't just Jermaine. We had 24 assists as a team in that game. And we had we chart screen assists and extra passes, you know, kind of the hockey assist, so to speak, in every game. And in that game, we had 16. And it's just amazing how, you know, efficient you can be when the ball is moving, when you have willing passers and you have willing screeners, of how it just makes everything go. And, you know, Jermaine's four assists were, you know, just 4 of the 24 that we had that night. And, you know, it was a fantastic offensive display for our whole team. But, you know, Jermaine specifically, that was one of his more complete games on both ends of the floor. You know, he scored it effectively, he rebounded, and then he was sharing the ball. And so it's been a lot of fun to see his development and his progression as the season has unfolded.
So there are 8 different players that had recorded an assist on Thursday. You look at, I don't know, at the end of the game, you had 16 threes. The school record's 19. I know that was not necessarily in the back of your mind, more of in the front of the mind, sure, as it seemed later on.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've told you before, I'm not going to shy away from going after that school record there from 3. I mean, it's only a matter of time before it does happen. I mean, we want to get the paint, we want to hunt those inside out threes, and we want our shooters to let it fly. And 16 was, I mean, it was definitely clicking there for us, and we were in a good rhythm as we got deeper into that second half. And you know, as we got into those last 5 minutes, I had thought that we would be able to, you know, make a run at that school record. But at the same time, I mean, we were up, you know, I think 33 points at the time, and up 33 points, it was time to, you know, pull the regular rotation players and let some of the other guys get in the game and play. And, unfortunately we weren't able to score again, you know, and go after that record. But hey, you know, it was still a wonderful night. You know, glad those other guys got a chance to get in the game and play. But you know, 16 threes, that's a fantastic evening from the perimeter, and we'll take that any chance we get.
Maybe I'm getting a little blinded by it, but when you hit 15, 16 threes in the game, I just consider it your offense, and like let's go, let's hit threes, and it's just a part of the game now, more or less.
No, that's exactly right. It is, and team, you know, certain teams, you know, specifically UTPB, the way they were playing us, they're asking for us to take those threes and to get those 3-point attempts up. And if a team's defensive game plan is calling for that, we'll happily oblige them.
And then on Saturday, didn't hit as many threes, but hit threes at a very good rate, 9 of 22. So that totals 40.9%, right where you want to be.
Yeah, exactly. In a low possession, I should say, lower possession game as Saturday's was, it was a very efficient shooting night for us, and that's what saved us, because we weren't great in a lot of other areas. But being able to hit, we closed the game out making. We started the game making several threes to establish a little bit of a lead, and then we went flat for, you know, a large portion of the game in the middle there from the perimeter. And a lot of that was having to do with not being able to get them up, because their defense made a little bit of an adjustment. But as the game wore on, they got a little bit, I'd say, more fatigued relative to us. I think we're the deeper, fresher team, you know, in these tight turnarounds. With most everyone that we play, even though we were playing without Jaylen Brown, we still have a deeper bench than the Falcons did. And as the game wore on, we were able to shake loose and get some quality looks and finish a very effective efficient shooting night from 3.
Once again, it was Jermaine Carter. Derek Ogechi led the team, but it's Jermaine Carter with the second double-double in the last 3 games, 16 points, 11 rebounds, and over half of those on the offensive end. Can't say enough about how Jermaine's able to get to the offensive glass.
Well, I think as it stands currently, he's 5th in the nation, yes, in offensive rebounding, and he understands that that's part of his role, just like the shooters have to shoot. Jermaine has to crash the offensive boards. We need those possessions, both from, you know, for his scoring, but also from our team efficiency perspective. We need the extra possessions that those offensive rebounds generate, but they also generate opportunities to get fouled. They generate opportunities for him to score. And so those are critical for us and our success. And again, that's one of those roles that not everybody wants or is willing to take on, but he has just embraced it and understands the importance of it to our team. Our team supports him as he does it. One of the risks associated with that is foul trouble. I mean, Jermaine is probably up there, I would say certainly in the Lone Star and perhaps nationally, but nobody really tracks this stat. But in over the back calls, it's one that you can't crash as aggressively as he does and not pick up, one or two as it goes. And it's kind of similar to, point guards that are, harassing the ball defensively. Well, they're going to pick up one or two just from working hard and pressuring the ball. And it just goes with the territory. But that's, again, as I was talking about roles earlier on, that's part of his job that he has to do on a daily basis for us. And he embraces it. He throws everything he has from an effort and energy level into fulfilling that role. And it's been great to see him embrace that and our team support him in that area.
And Derek Ogechi, he led the team 18 points, hit 4 threes, but coming from Midland College, you'd mentioned this in the post game, and it wasn't incidental that he was on the game day graphic for that one as well. But yeah. Probably a little more for him in that game.
No, it was. It was, good for him to be able to play in front of his, connections from his time there, in junior college. His coach, and some others were able to come watch him play. So I was happy for him that he was able to make some shots. And probably the two plays that I was, most pleased with him on the offensive end were he had a mid-range drive from the right side, that kind of started that separation run at the end of the game. I believe it was tied, and it was about 6 or 7 minutes left, and he drove in and made a nice bank shot over a defender from about 10 or 12 feet out, which is a shot that he's been working on all year but hasn't really thrown in games. And then a couple minutes later, as we were just, finalizing that separation, he had a drive down the paint and had a left-handed finish, around their big man, which, again, is a move that he didn't have in his bag of tricks a few months ago, and he's been working at it. And so that was good to see that his game is progressing and some of those skills that he'd been working on were able to come out in a big moment for us.
Another player that had a big game, not necessarily scoring-wise, he did hit 2 threes, Luke Hamilton, but he does what Luke does, always finds a way to contribute to a victory. He had 10 rebounds as well.
Yeah, no, Luke's been a very consistent player for us this year. Part of his development, he's certainly a willing shooter. There's no question. He's not shy about shooting, and I love that about him. However, his game needs to grow beyond just being a shooter, and that's something that he's been working to do. He's improved as a rebounder, as evidenced by, the double-figure rebounds that he got in the game. But Luke's also a good passer. Luke, believe it or not, is a good post player if he would just ever go down there. And that's something that we give him a hard time about every day. I think that's an area of his game that he just hasn't even begun to tap into and explore. He's being a good decision maker, being tall. He's physically strong. I mean, it's kind of as if, and I've teased him a little bit about, he was a skinny shooter most of his life, and I can relate to that. But there comes a time where as you work hard on your body and the weight room and adding strength and weight, Luke's not the skinny guy anymore out there. I mean, he's a big, strong man that needs to go out there and not be afraid to throw that size around the basket. And he's beginning to do it on the defensive end without question. But I think the next step in his game is doing that on the offensive end. And as he couples that with his shooting, I think he has the opportunity to be a real special player.
And one player I don't want to skip this week, Pierre Sanders, he finished with 12 points on Thursday on just 5 shots and then took 4 shots and scored 10 points. But what he did down the stretch, the lion's share of his 8 of 10 from the free throw line came in the last 2 minutes to put away the game.
Yeah. Pierre's been a rock for us all year. There without a doubt have been growing pains and learning opportunities for Pierre as a freshman, but he's learned on the floor. I think he's averaging just under 25 minutes a game. He's someone that I trust on both ends to go out and help us excel. Defensively, he's he's carried a heavy burden for us this year when he's been in the game. He is always responsible for pressuring that ball, crashing the boards on both ends. I believe he's our team leader in steals as well. He's someone that has really taken off this year, and understanding all the different aspects that going into being a successful point guard in the Lone Star Conference. And his efficiency on Thursday night was spectacular, you know, getting the 12 points. But on Saturday, it was a little bit uncharted for him. Most games, you know, we'll kind of have that point guard by committee down the stretch, sharing the ball as the teams are trying to pressure us, foul us to come back late. And Saturday, I just made the decision. I'm like, no, we're going to get everybody else out of the way. And young man, you need this. You need to, you know, he had one turnover, in the last 2 minutes, and I know that bothered him, but it was one of those that I was certainly willing to deal with, because point guards need to know how to close out a game. That involves getting rebounds. It involves just getting catches for possessions, not putting yourself in bad situations when you handle the ball where they may be attempting a quick steal or a swipe, you know, in the process of, giving that foul. Every once in a while, you know, you, as a coach, you tell players late in the game, well, we know we're fouling, so just go be aggressive trying for the steal. Try once or twice for the steal. And then if you don't get it, you can foul. Well, a lot of times you can catch guards being careless in those situations and maybe get a free one. And that was something that, we've talked a lot about this year. And so to see him have the ball in his hands, make good decisions, and then ultimately seal it with makes at the free throw line was a real positive step in his development.
And the turnovers for the two games, you had just 5, I believe, on Thursday night and 12 on Saturday. So you average those out, that's 8.5 per game. That's a good number.
You know, it really was. And of those 12, 7 of them were in the first, in a 5-minute stretch of the first half on Saturday. And so there was that one lapse. But I mean, just being honest with you, that needs to be who we are moving forward. You look at our backcourt, obviously Terrell Wilson, Pierre, Ramel Williams, Derek Ogechi, we should not be turning the ball over. We should be a team that consistently is able to take care of the ball and keep our turnovers to a minimum. Our skill level amongst those players is such that some of the high turnover numbers that we've had this year need to be something that we leave in this season, and as we move forward the rest of this year and into the future years, that needs to be a hallmark of how we play.
It was a great weekend. Mustangs improved to in the regular season at 11-7, which is big because it'll be the first winning season since 15-16, so it shows the program is moving in that direction. And we'll talk in the second segment about Lone Star Conference postseason and a little more about the season. You're listening to the Staying Game Men's Basketball Podcast on the Mustangs Digital Network.
In Texas, whether it's work or play, Ford trucks lead the way. Like the Ford F-150 with best-in-class payload, or the Ford Super Duty with best-in-class towing. Ford trucks come with premium features that make the Ford F-Series America's best-selling truck for 43 years and the best-selling truck in Texas. Upgrade to a new Ford F-Series today only at your Texas Ford dealer. Ford F-Series, built for Texas, built for you. Based on 1977 2019 CY total sales.
You've welcomed us into your home, from couches to visit on, stoves to cook on, and beds to jump on. Only the best in furniture and appliances for over 70 years. Thank you for making us a part of the family. Proud to be your hometown furniture store since 1944.
It's your style. It's our tradition. Hamilton Bryan.
Whether on the field or on the grill, nobody does game day better than you. The best tailgates start with the best beef, and the best beef is Rancher's Reserve. It's USDA Choice All Angus Beef, so it's more tender, juicy, and flavorful. And that means it's sure to be the talk of your tailgate. Nothing says go team like a tailgate done right. So fire up your grill, tailgaters. We'll see you on game day. Rancher's Reserve, available at Market Street and United Supermarkets, where we do beef the best.
Star Bright Cleaners in Wichita Falls is the best choice for superior quality and service at an unbeatable price. Stop by and see for yourself at our Kemp or Seymour Highway locations. We guarantee you'll feel the difference from drop-off to pickup. Done right, on site, on time, guaranteed. In a hurry? Don't worry. Every Star Bright Cleaners has a convenient drive-thru for express service. Come give us a try today. You'll be glad you did. Star Bright Cleaners, serving Texoma for over 30 years.
You're listening to the Sting Gang Men's Basketball Podcast on the Mustangs Digital Network. It's your host, Trey Reed, along with Midwestern State Head Coach Justin Leslie. And Coach, and we're talking during the break here about all the scenarios last week that the Mustangs had to watch. And pretty much, you know, at the end of the day, it's like you've been saying all year, all you can do is win in order to help yourself out. But ended up with the number six seed, which seemed pretty clear on the last day. Like I was like, okay, we're going to be the sixth seed, we're going to play DBU. There's no question about that. It was if UTPB happened to come through with a win, then it was going to take one of two things to happen. And as we were talking about, both of them did end up happening. So the Mustangs were going to be in anyway, but now you get DBU. This probably is the most interesting scenario to me, because it's a place at the Berg Center where you played well the first two times, and how the 2 1-point losses came to be were just almost, in a sense, flukish, especially the second game. First game was a big shot by their star Chandler Jacobs. But I mean, this has the markings to be another incredible game.
No, I have no doubt that it will be. You know, it's definitely a fun place to play. I mean, they'll have a fantastic crowd. It'll be a wonderful environment. I have no doubt. But you know, you have two teams that there's a little bit of a clash in styles in terms of how we you know, like to play, and so it presents, you know, basketball is a game of matchups. You know, there's some teams that you're just suited to play against more than others, and our particular matchup is one that really, I think our offensive strengths are a problem for DBU to stop. And, you know, conversely, their offensive strengths are a problem for us. And so, you know, as you look at the first two games, you know, I think the lowest, I mean, it was 81-80 and 91-90. It was a game that featured a lot of scoring. DBU is an elite offense. And in fact, they're, you know, one of the best in the country, you know, most efficient offenses in the country. And so we're going to have to, you know, be prepared to guard and compete with everything we have to come out successful.
DBU is... finished the regular season at 15-3. They lost at Arkansas Fort Smith. The Lions played pretty well down the stretch themselves. They, particularly at home, they knocked off a few opponents. But this DBU team, their losses were at Canyon, in which they came back the next night and beat WT early in the year. They dropped a game at UTPB after the 2 1-point wins against Midwestern State. And then the third one, obviously, was Fort Smith was their third loss. But you look at this team, and they still look pretty similar statistics to when you played the first time. Obviously, Chandler Jacobs, 20.6 points per game, grabbed 7.2 rebounds, and he still shooting the ball well at 48%, I believe, earlier in the year when the Mustangs went to the Berg Center the first time. He was hovering somewhere around 53-54% from beyond the arc.
Yeah, it is very similar. I mean, their numbers were elite then, and still are now. I mean, you know, you talk about the loss they had at Permian Basin right after us. They lost 99-97, so they were still scoring. It was a matter of guarding in that situation. You know, there's no question Chandler Jacobs is a legit All American candidate this year. He's one of the best players that on the offensive end that we've seen in some time. His ability to score from the perimeter and, you know, conference play. I mean, he's 58% from the floor, just spectacular. In addition to being a great 3-point shooter, so we're gonna have our hands full with him. You know, of course, he'll be a key focal point. But you know, you also have to you know, as you look at it, Ricky Lujan. Yep. You know, that would be that's the next key. He had some big baskets and some big plays for them against us the last time. And, you know, as a freshman, the impact that he's had this year for them has been spectacular. You know, he's probably likely, you know, conference freshman of the year, you know, all conference player to boot. So we're going to have to go in and do a really fantastic job on both of those two players.
Oh, no, look, I had to pull up his stats there because early in the year, it seemed like he was hitting 4, 5, 6, even up to 7 threes in a game pretty regularly. But I look at it now, and he's at 38 threes in 16 games. So, obviously, he's been drawing attention.
Yeah, well, it's twofold. One, he's getting defended differently. Teams aren't just – I mean, not that they were allowing him to shoot early on. You didn't know if it was something that was sustainable or not, and clearly he's shown that it is. You know, as coaches, you know, you're always evaluating not just their talent but also players' bodies as they progress. And he's someone that just has a really good, you know, lack of a better term, like pop, like in his jump. So when he elevates to shoot, it creates a very consistent release point, which has allowed him to shoot the ball well from deep. But at the same time, one of the places where he's defying the odds from an analytics perspective is he's made the mid-range shot, specifically going to his left, a highly efficient shot. He's shooting the ball really, really well because he's able to, you know, he's about 6'2", I think, but he's able to get one or two dribbles past his defender at the three-point line when they're crowding him, and then use that size and pop to elevate over smaller guards and, you know, shoot those 10, 12 footers that for most guys it's a bad shot, but for him it's a good one.
Another freshman that's kind of come on throughout the year is another 6'6 guard, Cameron Kahn. He scored 15 points in the first game, didn't miss a shot against the Mustangs in the first game, 7-7, hit a three, but he's a guy that's upped his scoring average to 10.8 points per game. He's coming off the bench.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's not a guard. He's 6'6", and he's about 250 pounds. I mean, he is a load, and he dribble operates very well. He's someone that likes to get you down around the basket and then spin. You know, with that big wide body, the spin move is one that's a little bit more difficult to guard. But he's really come on as of late. He's been playing really well. Had a huge game over the weekend for him, and is playing at a high level. You know, he's a kid that played AAU ball with some of our players, and they're all very familiar with each other. And so, you know, slowing him down off the bench is going to be a big key because they have all those shooters that they play with. Obviously, we've talked about, you know, Jacobs and Lujan, but I think the big key for their success has been William, Heather, and Kahn when they're able to play effectively in the middle because they play four of those guards and then they alternate those two bigs in. They don't play them together. And when those two get a rhythm, it makes them very hard to guard.
And I had to go look at their roster. Then I was like thinking, okay, 6'6", 250, are they listing all their players as a guard? To go back to another podcast discussion that we had. And I was like, wow. But no, they do list three forwards.
Yep.
But another one's Jalen White, shoots the ball very well from three. In fact, lately against Western New Mexico, he hit 7 threes in that series. And he's a kid from Wichita Falls.
Yeah. You know, Jalen's really played well for him this year. He's, you know, a long, lanky defender who is able to rebound well at his position. And at the offensive end, he's a knockdown shooter. I mean, he shoots the ball at a very high rate. I mean, he's someone that, you know, as you look through, you know, just overall numbers, I mean, he's over 50% from the floor, you know, about 40% from three, you know, and he's scoring 10 points on a lower number of overall shots. And so he definitely brings, you know, a very valuable piece to the equation for them. You know, and being a local kid, you know, I can't help but say, you know, and I've said it to others. I mean, he's the type of player that I really enjoy coaching, you know, and had I been here a couple years ago, I certainly would have recruited him.
Very interesting. And I'd forgotten that they'd had a local guy on there. It kind of surprised me, and always, yeah, to the roster, oh, he's from Wichita Falls.
Yeah.
But another kick that I get out of watching the games is like when it seems like no matter who comes off the bench for the Mustangs is that opposing coaching staff, you always hear them, shooter, shooter, shooter. I'm like,
yeah,
well, that's not going to help you much because every pass you're probably going to go shooter, shooter. But that's always interesting. In fact, whenever you play DBU, probably the same issue.
There's no question. There's no question. I mean, you have to account. I mean, yeah, I've said it many times, but basketball, the team with the most points at the end of the night wins. And so you have to account for who can put the ball in the basket, and especially if they can do it from three. The game has changed. You have to be able to shoot the three to be successful, and you have to be able to guard the three if you want to be successful on defense. And so as you go up and down these two rosters, you have a lot of shooters. And so that's going to be a really big key for both of our teams is how we limit the other's impact on the three-point line.
So now take a look at the Lone Star Conference Championship bracket. Mustangs down as the sixth seed facing number three DBU. The winner of that game will face either West Texas A&M, they're the two seed, or UT Permian Basin. Interesting note before we head to the top of the bracket, but due to an agreement made with administrators in the Lone Star Conference, if the Lubbock Christian women, they're the number one seed on the women's side, if they win, then Lubbock will host the women's side, and the men's will go to the number two seed. So if West Texas A&M wins, off we go to Canyon. Kind of family, in a way. that was a series that was delayed due to COVID, delayed and then canceled, because obviously that's not going to be made up. Top side of the bracket, the first seed is Lubbock Christian, who's coming off of season-ending win at West Texas A&M after the Buffs had beaten the Chaps in Lubbock. That was their one and only loss this season. The Chaps will be playing St. Edwards on Tuesday, and then Angelo State, the 5 seed, will go to face Texas A&M Kingsville as the number 4 seed. So lines up. No matter what, you're going to have a tough road to the championship. No matter what team you are in this league,
no, you're exactly right. I mean, it's unfortunate that the season and NCAA tournament field has been cut down for the Lone Star, because this is a particularly strong year for the league. You know, we have very, very good teams. I mean, elite national teams at the top of the conference, you know, and then you look at those of us that are, you know, just outside of that, I mean, the top three and four with Kingsville, they belong, you know, at the top of the national, you know, conversation. However, you know, you look at teams number 5 through 8, you know, I like to think that this would have been a year that if we would have been able to play our crossovers with the RMAC, I think that this would have been a very favorable year for the Lone Star Conference to, you know, possibly get 6 teams into that regional field. The RMAC, as it has played out this year, has only had, you know, really 2 teams that have separated themselves right from the rest of the pack. And I think the depth of our league would have enabled us to, you know, just have a special season as a conference had we been given the opportunity to showcase that. But, you know, with COVID this year, it just wasn't a reality. And so now this puts us in a situation where it just makes the stakes that much higher in the Lone Star Conference, because we know we're going to get 3 teams in. The likelihood of a fourth, you know, is really up in the air. Depends on how this all progresses. But this promises to be a fantastic tournament with the dynamic of, you know, West Texas possibly getting to host the semifinal and final. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a wild week in the Lone Star Conference.
And it's kind of interesting, because when you talk about conference tournament to the regional, it may work out to where they'll just swap sites, because the WT are going to host the women on the regional side and the regionals, and then Lubbock Christian will host the men. So these could almost be a similar tournament with two interlopers coming in from maybe the Great American Conference. So, I mean, hopefully that would mean that the semifinals, if it ends up being seeded that way, would be all Lone Star Conference. That would be a good scenario.
There's no question, and it's very possible. However, you know, I have to say, you know, the teams in the GAC, you know, will be really interesting to see how that plays out. But I certainly would, you know, if I had to, you know, place a choice on who I think is going to come out of it, you know, I'd be pretty confident in believing that it's going to be one of the powers from the Lone Star.
So you look now to clarify for the listeners. So midstream, the NCAA switched the regional alignments this year due to the limited number of teams that were participating across the country. So what they did was they balanced out the regions to have at least close to equal number of participating schools. So what ended up happening is the Lone Star Conference was paired with the Great American Conference, and the Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference was paired with the Pacific West Conference, West Coast or
yes, and the one GNAC school.
Yes, and the GNAC.
Yeah.
So,
but there's only one team from there, so it's kind of it's definitely a unique situation.
Pretty much a Pac West.
That's it. That's exactly
right. Pac West plus one.
That's it.
So, the Great American Conference. You look at that. They separated into Eastern and Western divisions. Eastern meaning Arkansas, and they only played their Eastern or Arkansas teams, and the Western or Oklahoma side played just the Oklahoma schools. And how it turned out, Arkansas Monticello and Southern Arkansas tied for the Eastern Division title, 13-4 records apiece, and Oklahoma Baptist won the West with a 14-4 mark. So what that means for the region, we will have to see, but those would be the top three candidates to fill out possibly half the field.
No, that's it. I listened to a podcast that was hosted by the chair of the D2 selection committee, and one of the things that was specifically asked was you may have some stronger conferences that may merit four teams relative to two, and highlighted was the Lone Star and the Great America Conference as a possible situation where that may come about. And so it's kind of worked out interesting with the Great American schools, how you have there's a clear top three, all right, but we'll need to see what happens here in the conference tournament, because only playing such a small number of schools, it's really going to be hard to, as you normally look at a tournament field, you're looking at all those other, performance indicators that, strength of schedule, opponents win percentage, opponents win percentage, but there's just a small sample size that has happened. It's really hard to make an apples to apples comparison. And so, you have a couple crossovers that did happen. I mean, like, for example, Oklahoma Baptist, who's the top seed in that, has the best record. They took a pretty significant loss at West Texas when they played. And if your best team, gets beat pretty good by, our second place team, I think that shows, demonstrates, how strong, the conference is. You wish there would have been a few more games to be able to make more comparisons, but that's all we have this year. And so, I don't envy the committee's responsibility of having to sort through that mess.
It sounds to me like they're going to just have to kind of count on the numbers that are there and probably just have to go with that.
No, that's correct. That's correct. Whoever the seventh team is going to be hurting. There's no question once that field gets announced. However, that's not to say that, we have a lot of capable teams in our conference. And then as does, the Great American, that you might have someone come out of left field, so to speak, and earn their way into the tournament. And now it really gets interesting, in the whole seeding. And obviously that's the boat that we're in. And, we're hoping to upset the apple cart there and, work our way in.
I remember using a line in the 2011 South Central Regional, 2010 was the year that went to Central Oklahoma. And that line was, we went in as a sixth seed, so we went to the Elite Eight in 3-2-1, and that's exactly probably the route that the Mustangs would have to take, is you face the three seed right away, you get the two seed West Texas A&M, then if the one seed wins in and gets to the final, that's the route that you had to take. We've seen it happen at the regional level. Hopefully we can duplicate that 10 years later at the conference tournament and bust into the regional.
Well, that would be fantastic. I mean, it's going to be a tall order for any team to win this Lone Star Conference tournament. There's 8 fantastic teams. Element where they are only going to take 6 teams into the NCAA. So I have a strong sense that there's going to be a sense of desperation and, you know, just urgency that you're going to see from everybody. There's no time to be complacent. There's no time to, you know, look to the future. I mean, it is now. It is every game with everything that you have, and you just hope that over the course of the season, you know, as a coaching staff and as a team, you've done enough development to prepare yourself for whatever is next. You know, this isn't a time where you're able to reinvent who you are, change game plans drastically. This is about being the best version of yourself, because you have to play a lot of games in a short turnaround if you're going to advance. And so, that's why I always challenge my teams just to continue getting better, because once you get to this stage of the season, it's not about what we do in practice this week. It's about what we've done in practice and games for the last 4 months. You know, this is where your body of learning, so to speak, that's where this really comes into play and is going to determine who advances and ultimately has success and wins the conference and regional tournament.
Well, to borrow your term, as you say, the hay is in the barn.
It sure is.
Look forward to keeping these conversations going. And if anything, no matter what, we'll have another one next week to talk about the Lone Star Conference tournament. And then we'll whenever the time may come, we'll wrap up and look forward into next season.
Fantastic, Trey. Thanks. It's always fun.
Enjoyed these, and I've missed these the last 2 weeks, and look forward to more.
Yes, indeed.
You've been listening to the Stain Gang Men's Basketball Podcast on the Midwestern State Digital Network. Stain Gang Basketball Podcast, presented by the Greater Texas Ford Dealers, drop weekly on the Midwestern State Digital Network. We invite you to keep up with the podcast on social media at MSU Mustangs on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Want to listen to or download the cast? Go to MSUMustangs.com/podcast. You've been listening to the Stain Gang Podcast, presented by the Greater Texas Ford Dealers on the Midwestern State Digital Network.